swagger, okay? Regardless of what happens out there, doesn't matter. Keep your swagger.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Podcast. I'm your host today, TJ Branson. If you guys want to find us, we're on Twitter at FHF Hockey. We got a Fantasy Hockey Discord you guys can join. Just hit 1,800 members. Pretty stoked about that. The plan of action today is we got Ian Gooding on the show. We're talking breakout candidates. We're going to have some fun with that. Ian, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great, TJ. How are you?
I'm doing good. So if you guys want to find Ian, he's on Twitter at Ian_Gooding. You guys can check out his writings at Dobber Hockey. And if there's anything else you're working on, man, floor is yours.
Yeah. Ramblings 2 to 3 times a week. Also, the top 100 Roto rankings over at Dobber Hockey. I've also contributed to the fantasy guide, a fair bit of information on the team profiles as well. Should mention I'm the managing editor over there. So I have a say in a lot of the the decisions made for other articles as well, scheduling, finding new writers, sort of the management part of the site. A lot of stuff that you maybe don't see that happens behind the scenes as well. So, you know, it's why some of my colleagues are a little more active on Twitter than I am, perhaps, just because my time is more spent kind of behind the scenes, I guess, as well. So I spend a fair bit of time on that too.
So today the plan is we're going to be talking about some of these breakout candidates. Some of them are being drafted, some of them are not. But before we get to any of that, I want to know, like, what do you look for in a breakout candidate? Is it the rate stats? Is it a potential deployment increase? Or is it a mix of everything?
I think it's a mix of everything. Like, is the player set to take on a greater role on the team? Like, for instance, could they be from the second unit power play to the first unit power play, as just an example here, playing more likely to play on the top six? Might be a younger player that's reaching a certain, let's call it a breakout threshold. There's a good article on Dobber Hockey about the breakout threshold and how that works. Traditionally, it's been found that a player that reaches their fourth season, that's usually around the time where you start to see their potential. You've got to keep in mind that oftentimes we look for rookies and somebody that's going to really be that next great rookie, but a lot of players don't really hit that sort of sweet spot in their career until around that fourth year. Shouldn't say it happens exactly, because for some players as well, like a smaller body player or a bigger body player, that could take longer potentially as well. And for like a goalie, it's going to be completely different as well. You're going to be typically waiting even longer for a goalie, and that whether a goalie becomes a superstar, that becomes a whole lot less predictable as well, especially nowadays, is what we're seeing.
So there's still hope for my Carter Hart yet, maybe.
Yeah, I think there is. I think many people have jumped off the bandwagon, so it's the perfect time to buy low on him. I'm not guaranteeing he's going to be a star. I think a lot of keeper teams were sort of banking on it. I know in one league of mine, somebody was really, really tried to acquire him and sort of make him that, you know, kind of build the team around him, and it hasn't quite worked out that way. So, but again, he's a very, very young goalie, maybe perhaps brought up a bit too early.
I think that I was reading the Ramblings that somebody traded Matthews for him.
Yeah, that happened a few years ago. That wasn't recent. That was a few years ago where he was so highly sought after.
Yeah.
That, yeah, they're trading Austin Matthews. So obviously, that looks like a bad decision now. But at the time, it probably made some sense. Mind you, I wouldn't trade a top goalie prospect for a top forward prospect just because you don't know. So if somebody came and offered, say, pick a top prospect, you know, a scoring prospect at the top of the list, and say Yaroslav Askarov or Jesper Wallstat, I don't think I wouldn't make that deal. I think I would hang on to the score.
Yeah. I think you're right. There's a lot more volatility in goalies. Now, we had this conversation. It's not on my itinerary here, but we had this conversation inside the Discord today. And I just want to get your take off the top here. We've seen Alexis Lafreniere for a couple years now, right? And he's a left wing traditionally. So we know he's blocked by Panarin. We know he's blocked by Chris Kreider, especially on the power play. Lafreniere plays that net front. That's where Kreider, that's his bread and butter. I mean, if we're being honest. So how much leash are you giving a guy like Alexis Lafreniere based on first overall pedigree? Obviously, there's something in the tank that we haven't seen, but it just doesn't seem like, without a switch to right wing at least, that the deployment's not going to be there.
Yeah, not right away. It might not be on the right team, the Rangers anyway. But at the same time, he's only entering his third season. He's only 20 years old. I said that a number of years ago about MacKinnon, where people were ready to give up on him after his third season, after that disastrous season that Colorado had, and MacKinnon barely cracked 50 points. So you have to kind of wait on these guys a little bit. I think sometimes when we draft players that high, even first overall, there's the assumption that they're just going to jump into the NHL right away and become superstars. That might be the case for a McDavid or aforementioned Matthews, but for some of these other guys, you've got to wait a little bit. You've got to wait a few years. So it's an exercise in patience. You know, I definitely, if somebody thinks that Lafreniere is not going to be a superstar, I might try to buy low on that. I'm not saying he will be 100%. Maybe the likelihood is a bit lower given the first two seasons, but you also have to throw deployment in there as well, that the Rangers just simply haven't. You know, they've got a deeper team. They don't have to use him the way that perhaps, you know, another struggling team might. Think about it. They really lucked out in the lottery draft picking him. They weren't a bottom team when they picked him. Whereas if he went to a franchise that was clearly at the bottom, then I think they would be putting him on the first and second line, and maybe we'd be speaking a little bit differently about him.
No, I could see that. I'm really hoping the right wing thing works for him. What do they have, like Sammy Blais up on the top line right now? It's stranger things, but let's get into the meat and potatoes here. I'll kick it off. We talked a little bit about deployment, and I'm thinking Seth Jarvis is a lock for the top line. Pacioretty's not there, so I think and I hope that there's a place for him on the top power play too. 40 points in 68 games, 17 goals. Shots on goal per 60, like, it's ahead of guys like Vincent Trocheck, who were over two shots a game with the time on ice that I kind of expect Jarvis to be getting this year. I think he was, you know, mid-13s, and I'd like to see him up in like 17-ish area, which might be a pipe dream, but I'm curious your pulse on Seth Jarvis this year.
Yeah, very popular sleeper pick. I mean, you're not the only one who's picked him as a sleeper. I've looked at quite a few that have Seth Jarvis on there. And for good reason. He's a rookie player, got to 40 points, you know, which is pretty good. I don't think I draft him in the top 100 in any single season draft, but I think you're probably going to have to pick him shortly after if you do want to target him. You make a great point about him potentially being on the top line with Pacioretty out. I'd be interested to see if he stays there once Pacioretty's back, but it sounds like Patches is going to miss at least half the season. So, yeah, I think he's if you're looking for players that potentially break out, I think he's probably a good choice.
He has been kind of like the marquee, let's call it like on the radar sleeper, and maybe not so much off the radar like some of the deeper guys, but everything's there, everything's right on the forefront for him. So I'm hoping he grabs it. I want to throw over to you. I'm looking at your list here. It says Hughes, and I'm just going to guess that we're talking Jack.
That's correct. Yeah, I should have clarified that earlier, but yeah.
It could be any of them.
Yeah, Luke Hughes. Yeah. He's debuting this year now. So Jack Hughes, I have on mine. Maybe this is a no-brainer, but this is potentially a jump into elite status. Jack Hughes, we haven't seen him, I guess, last season. If he played a full season, he was on pace for 94 points. I don't quite think he would get to that this year, but he was over a point per game. There were a few luck metrics. His shooting percentage, points per 60, were a little bit higher than normal. So you might have to sort of ease up on that. If you're thinking he's going to push for 100, I think a point per game sounds very reasonable, though. I think New Jersey will be better with their scoring, again, assuming he can stay healthy. I don't think that was a I wouldn't say he's specifically a Band-Aid boy, but he did deal with a couple of injuries last year. I think the second one was more about, it was kind of a minor knee sprain. I think it was just kind of New Jersey out of the playoffs, so they just kind of more or less decided to shut him down. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on the internet, so I wouldn't say that they would have kept playing him if the games were important, but I think that may have factored into it.
He's right there in that four years.
Yep.
Rounding out on 200 games, right at that perfect breakout threshold.
Yeah.
New Jersey, every single year, they're so interesting because they make all these moves, and it seems like this might be the first offseason they haven't paid a defenseman $9 million, but they always go out and get somebody. This year, Andre Palat, Vitek Vanacek. New Jersey is always shiny coming into it. And Jack Hughes, hopefully he can stay healthy. I love his ceiling. And his ADP in Yahoo is really strange. It's like, last time I checked, it was like 90, which is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Very wild.
Yeah.
All right. My next guy is, man, this one barely needs a sell. And it's Evan Bouchard. And I think just it's the top power play. If he gets it, this is going to be an insane year for him. I guess my question on this one is just like, what are your feelings as far as who gets the power play? Is it tried and true Barry, or is it maybe give Bouchard a shot?
Well, he did get a chance last year. They weren't completely 100% on Barry last season. Bouchard ended up with 7 power play points, which was mainly, if you break down the percentages, there was more given to Tyson Barry than there were with Bouchard. But I do remember for a stretch they had Barry or Bouchard on the first unit. I think coaches tend to be creatures of habit, so I think I would probably be leaning more towards Barry taking on the first power play unit. But again, Barry had a bit of a down year. If you compare that to his 2020, the 2020-21 season where he absolutely exploded. So yeah, I would think that I would have to, you know, like Bouchard as a potential sleeper. I think he can match his point total for sure. 43 points in 81 games. So I would almost go with him. I think there's a good chance he could get to 50. I don't know if he will. I think a lot will depend on the power play, but I think if he can get that first power play, I think he can probably get to 50.
Oh yeah. 50 is, that would be a floor on that top power play, man. It's going to be mean. And what I love about Bouchard is he just does so much more in periphery than Tyson Barry even does. So it would just be like a perfect fantasy player if he does get those power play points in the offense to go with the added periphery. All right, let's kick it back over to you. You're number two. Who do you got?
I had Josh Norris listed as the next one, and I say this just having lost a bidding war on him. But I like the moves that they've made in Ottawa this offseason. I think that Norris can benefit from, I think if he's on that top line again with Brady Tkachuk, teams won't be focused so much on shutting down that line as much now that they brought in DeBrincat. And Giroux, Tim Stutzel's going to be a year older. I think there's a potential here for Norris. He scored 35 goals in just 66 games last season. So obviously he was on pace for a 40-plus goal season, perhaps a bit under the radar in Ottawa. I'd excluded him from the top 100 Roto rankings during the summer. And I had a few people bringing up, why is Josh Norris not in there? And he should be a top 100 player in Roto leagues. And I think over a full season, assuming he can play a full season, I think you're going to start to really see what he's capable of as well. So I think he's another one that's on that fourth year breakout. He's another one that I had in the ramblings. So he's sort of right in that spot there. Mind you, I would caveat there that first season was only 3 games. So I mean, really, he's only going into a third season, but this seems like a good spot for him to break out as well. If you wouldn't say he has, if you were to say he hasn't broken out yet,
Yeah, I was going to say, how much more is there really? And that's, I mean, it's exciting to imagine that there's another gear. And with the quality of competition potentially going down, if, you know, opponents are going to have to spread themselves out because they finally have a second line now. All right, I want to play with fire on this next one here. And we're going to talk about a goalie. So really, we're just going to guess the best we can, I think. But we have Alexander Georgiev in Colorado. Now, Colorado is the, you know, Stanley Cup champion. They're a good team. They're still a good team despite everything they lost this offseason. But, you know, maybe this one's not a breakout, or it could be. But I'm thinking, like, relative to his ADP, I think he can, like, outperform that wildly if everything clicks right. And to bet on that kind of if with a goalie is pretty dangerous. So I just really just want to get a sense of what you think we can expect out of Georgiev here.
Yeah, I think this could be his, as far as a breakout goes, this could be his best season for sure. He's never played more than 35 games. So assuming he's a starting goalie, he will play 40 plus for sure. So that's in itself, not to mention playing for Colorado. He's never had more than 17 wins in a season for the Rangers. So playing for Colorado, we should easily get to 20, possibly much more, especially if he establishes himself as the starter. So he hadn't really impressed me as a backup for the Rangers. Like his numbers were okay. His goal saved above average, according to Frozen Tools, was in the negatives. Mind you, Colorado they're kind of playing the zero goalie strategy in real life, where, you know, they're putting their money towards MacKinnon and Makar and some of their other franchise players, you know, Nikushkin now. So they're trying to play cheap in net. And so a goalie like Georgiev and Pavel Francouz, that tandem would make sense for them. But they're going to be a skilled enough team where they don't have to have the best goalie bailing them out every night. So as far as a breakout goes, I think that's, you know, I think that's a good one to say, yeah, he's going to have a better season than he's had before. I think he's going to help your wins, but I don't know how much, how effective is he going to be in goals against average and save percentage. I don't know, but a very simple yet effective strategy when drafting goalies is fantasy hockey is pick the ones that play for what you think are the better teams.
And he's going late, so the investment is barely anything. So if it doesn't cash out, you know, you're pretty much in the same spot as you were. But if things click right, you know, you can outperform that ADP pretty wildly. All right, you're. I'm looking at this long shot here. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I just picked this one because doing some digging, and one more from the fourth year breakout, and I went way down for this one. The pick I have is Jake Bean. There was a little note in the fantasy guide. I'll give you a note here from, and this would have been written by Dauber himself here in regard to some of the advanced stats. He says, when you talk Bean versus Boqvist with fantasy owners, they prefer Boqvist hands down. So I guess say, yeah, Boqvist could be that breakout guy. He actually has Boqvist as sort of a breakout guy in the fantasy guide. Is that the right call? Bean, who's 2 years older, is closer to his prime, produced similar offense last season, saw more ice time, doesn't get hurt as often, and wasn't sheltered as much. You can see it in their advanced stats chart. Right now, Boqvist is getting slightly more power play time, so he's still getting favored, but don't be so quick to write off Bean. So I think that's a reason I like Bean. His second unit power play, so he shouldn't be going high in any drafts. But if you're looking for sort of a late round defenseman that can fill your roster, perhaps get you a few power play points, could maybe even push for 40 points, then Jake, why not look at Jake Bean?
I gotta say, I am one of the people that would favor Boqvist, but I don't know. There's not a ton. I guess the even strength. How do the even strength pairs go? Is Boqvist Werenski's pairmate, or is that Bean?
So a second here. Frozen Tools has that information, so it could tell you who the under the line combinations here. So it's actually, if you're looking at Yeah, it looks like Jake Werenski and Bean were a pair for nearly half of the season. Ooh. So as far as Boqvist goes,
that could be good.
His partner was, I would say, don't watch enough Columbus Blue Jackets hockey, I guess. I think it was more Vladislav Gavrikov.
No, that makes sense. There's going to be a lot of juicy points at even strength, even if the power play doesn't work out. Like, you've got a Johnny Gaudreau there. You've got a, I keep saying this, I feel like we got a new Patrick Laine because of Johnny Gaudreau. Like, this is a rejuvenated, and you know, you have the yin to the yang for Laine. So
yeah,
that even strength deployment is going to be fun.
Yeah, Columbus is much more of a team of interest this year than they have been in previous season, just because of Gaudreau. It's like, now they've got Gaudreau. Are they going to put him on the line with Laine? Who's going to be on that line? You know, you've got a list of like three or four centers that could play between them. You've got Kent Johnson. You've got Boone Jenner. You've got Cole Sillinger. You've got Jack Roslovich. You know, the leftovers on that line, or the leftovers from there, whoever doesn't play with them could form a pretty good second line.
Yeah.
So, right. And then you've got sort of the trickle down effect on the defensemen like Werenski, and of course Boqvist and Bean as well.
And they've got one of the most fun prospect pools at this point too. Like, you know, I think about Minnesota and Columbus and Montreal, even they, Buffalo too. I think they might have some of the best ones out there.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm going to hop over to Montreal now, where Cole Caulfield under Martin Saint-Louis was a new player entirely. 29 points in 26 games under the new head coach. He performed excellent here in the offseason. I'm already hearing about a shot. Somebody to keep an eye on, because I think with Martin Saint-Louis, it felt like we got a new Petrie, we got a new Suzuki, we got a new Cole Caulfield. So it was like, it was a brand new team. People just didn't want to play for Dominic Ducharme, and it was you know, Scott Cullen put it as like they're all quiet quitting, and it started to make sense a little bit. I'm watching Caulfield here. Even if Montreal is not going to be the sexiest team throughout the year, I think a lot of the guys are slipping there, and Caulfield probably the first one off the draft board, maybe Nick Suzuki. But if you can get a right wing cheap and he's putting up numbers anywhere similar to what he did with Martin Saint-Louis, I'm a pretty big fan of that.
Yeah, like you talk about what a different player Caulfield was, and you could see it in the numbers. Like the first half numbers for Caulfield, in 29 games, he had 8 points. And I remember I'd picked him as a potential rookie of the year, him or Zegras. And just thinking, okay, that pick's not going to work. But then they made their coaching change, and second half, over 38 games, Caulfield had 35 points. He was nearly a point per game player. Like, it was just it was night and day. So, you know, with the new coach, with Saint-Louis, who you would think maybe because of stature kind of profiles as a similar type of player, then you might think that Caulfield, that might carry over to this coming season where he might be a near point per game player. So, yeah, I think that's an excellent pick for a breakout. That's why you've got to really look at those first and second half numbers.
Oh, yeah. So on Calder, do you like Matty Beniers? I mean, I'm watching some of his stuff in the preseason here, and he's picking corners like crazy.
Yeah, I just liked his late season production when he joined the Kraken. Like, there was really, like, the first season for Seattle was pretty meh. Like, yeah, there was, you know, after those first few games, when you got to see the new team and the new uniforms, you know, there was nothing really appealing about that team. And, you know, living right next door to Seattle, you know, in the Vancouver area, I mean, there wasn't really much reason to watch the Kraken beyond just kind of checking them out early in the season. But when Beniers came onto the scene, he scored 9 points in 10 games, you know, with, you know, really the options that they had, which weren't much. I mean, he was on a line with Jordan Eberle and Ryan Donato, and he was scoring at nearly a point per game. This is why I think he's my pick for rookie of the year. I'm not saying he will get to a point per game this year, but I think I think there's something there for fantasy owners. I think in single season drafts, I think you've got to look a few of the mock drafts I did, I picked Beniers as a late round pick just because I like him. And, you know, of course, Seattle did, they did add to their scoring depth in the offseason. They added Oliver Bjorkstrand. They added Andre Burakovsky. I mean, they're not going to elevate Beniers to stardom by themselves, but they're certainly going to help the cause, and certainly they won't be, you know, they could spread out their scoring. I don't know how their line combinations will work, but I think there's, you know, potentially Beniers could lead the team in scoring in his rookie season.
Yeah, you got him here on your breakouts. I didn't even see that. I was curious. Yeah, there's a lot to be excited about. I think, well, maybe not like a lot, but relative to last year, there's a lot more to be excited about with Seattle. I'll be watching whether or not it's Dunn or Schultz getting that top power play. That's kind of a battle that I didn't even think would happen, but it is. But I'm right there with you. I think Beniers may be a long shot at McTavish, but maybe I'm just thinking of the World Juniors a little bit too much, where he's playing guys way younger than him. But it's going to be a fun Calder year.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to kick it into Artturi Lehkonen. He is another one, like we talked about with Seth Jarvis a little bit. Lehkonen's kind of one of the more on-the-radar sleepers this year. Lehkonen, he's got all the ingredients to put together a really good season. Now, Landeskog's out for who knows how long. That could be a left-wing one spot for him. And he could compete for that power play one, too. I mean, Evan Rodriguez is there, and you know, he might be able to fit the mold. My bet's on Nichushkin, but... you know, Lehkonen could be the guy that goes up there. So deployments there, I think he's safe in the top six, even if everybody's healthy, and, you know, a questionable power play one role that could or could not come. I'll bet the under on it, but I think Lehkonen is going to surprise some people. I'm not saying like, you know, point per game or anything, but, you know, 50, 60 points could be fun.
Yeah, his fantasy value definitely improved from Montreal. I mean, I had him as a sleeper a number of years ago, just because of the skills that he showed, the speed, some of the sort of the hockey sense. I know Dauber was pretty big on him, and he just never seemed to come around as, you know, as a reliable fantasy option. But that trade to Colorado really helped. Like in the playoffs, he ended up with 14 points in 20 games. So I'm kind of with you. I would sort of bet the under on him being on that first unit power play. I tend to think of if there's a question like that of, you know, which player would you pick? Follow the money. And they've paid a lot of money for Nichushkin. So I think Landeskog's absence, don't forget they've lost Nazem Kadri too. So I guess there'll be two openings on that power play. So it might end up being, both anyway, although they could, you know, they could throw another center in there. I think Rodriguez is a center, or maybe it's a JT comp for, you know, a sort of a face-off option. So, but yeah, I think I agree. I think there's, you know, I think for somebody like Lehkonen, I think he should get to 40 points and could even push for 50, which is better than what he was in Montreal.
So I see you got Lafreniere here. I didn't mean to, man, I should have said spoiler alert at the beginning, but Lafreniere for a breakout. How, you got to sell me on this one. I might be one of those guys that's down on him.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking about that one. I know I mentioned, I think I mentioned him elsewhere as a potential breakout. I mean, the deployment isn't really there, but it's just more of one of these years he's got to come around. And it's only his third season. So I would say if it doesn't happen this season, then I think it's more likely to next season. I think the Rangers are kind of building themselves as a team that are more of a three scoring line group, and they have the depth to do that. It looks like he's on that sort of kid line with Kaapo Kakko and Filip Hedl, which, I mean, it isn't bad. They were fairly effective during the playoffs. Maybe he doesn't break out in the way that, like into superstardom, but I think there's sort of modest improvement where you'll start to see Lafreniere on most fantasy teams as well. Whereas in the past, he was typically on a lot of waiver wires just because he didn't have that sort of production. I mean, he pushed for 20 goals last season, and he was kind of used all throughout the lineup. He was used His most frequent line mates actually were Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider, but that was only about 25% of the time. So they've kind of moved him all around the lineup. So it'll be interesting to see. I would just say that more as a don't give up on the kid. He's only 20. He's in his third year. So this isn't, I wouldn't say that this is going to happen this year. I'm less sure about this than I would be on somebody like Jack Hughes, but more of a, I guess, your keeper leagues, don't give up on the guy.
Yeah, I think it goes without saying, if he gets one of those top six right wing spots, yeah, it's on. I love the way that Vitali Kravtsov looks on that second line right now, so I'm hoping they stick with that. And he could be a breakout on his own if that line does wind up sticking. But Sammy Blais on line one, I don't know. They got to figure that out. It's got to be Lafreniere.
You know what? I picked up Sammy Blais in a salary cap league, not just because of the line deployment, because of the hits. It's a league that counts all kinds of peripheral stats, one of them being hits. And his salary was very, very affordable, and I needed to cut salary. So there he was. It just made sense. I think I dropped Scott Laughton and picked up Sammy Blais.
Save a couple mil.
As a Flyers guy, you probably have some opinions on Scott Laughton as well. So
I'm trying my hardest not to have opinions this year, just to save myself the pain.
Yeah.
No, I did the same thing with Sonny Milano. I was in a startup draft, and I kind of spent my money too quickly. So I think I had like six roster spots left, and I had like $6 million. And this was before Jake Oettinger had signed his deal. So like I was worried that there was going to be extra money there, but Sonny Milano landed in a good spot. I'm pretty happy about that. All right, I think I skipped over Bowen Byram here. I'm interested on this one.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Byram here is health. Obviously he's going to be stuck behind Cale Makar on the first unit power play, but I mean, who knows? Maybe they. There's an outside chance they could even go 3-4-2-D and include him. I would say that's quite a reach, but he was over a half point a game player. He's at 17 points in 30 games playing on that second unit power play, playing under 19 minutes a game. So this is a very, very, very productive player when he is out there. Personal note, I did see Byram play a few times during junior, so I might be biased, but just a really, really, really strong player. It was kind of like watching Bobby Orr in the NHL. You could compare Byram the way he plays in junior, just had that kind of, that kind of ability.
Especially love about him is you look at somebody like Devontae's, who put up incredible numbers, even from power play two, and kind of broke the mold as far as like, power play one defensemen are the only ones that matter. Mm-hmm. To the point where I think Devontae's is ranked inside the top 10 in Yahoo default rankings, which is nuts. But teams like to go 2D on their second power play because if, the penalty ends, then they have two defensemen out there and they're not scrambling.
Yeah.
And I think if Byron shares that second power play with Devontae's, that's even there, we're looking at above half point per game.
Yeah, and that could bump somebody like Samuel Girard off, which you got basically four defensemen there that can contribute points. So one of them could potentially be left out in the cold. They went with Toews and Girard, I think, last season on that second unit because Byron missed much of the season. He's had some concussion issues. That's actually what I was going to talk about, is concussion issues. They've held him to 30 games. Hopefully he's come around on that. Hopefully this, hopefully this isn't going to be an issue for him anymore. Cross my fingers. I like the kid. I want to see him do well. If that's the case, then I think they have to give him that, find a way to get him on that second unit. I don't really know how, but again, you're talking about a potentially, 40 plus point defenseman on a 46 point pace last season. And just because a defenseman doesn't get the first unit power play doesn't mean they can't score. Obviously Colorado is a deep team. The second unit obviously isn't as nearly stacked as their first unit, but he's going to profile to be a high scoring defenseman anyway.
And I'm hoping on the peripheral, he's going to be an important defenseman going forward.
Yeah.
All right. I got my reach here. And it's there is some bias here because I'm a big Philip Tomasino fan. Half like pushing half point per game. He still hit the under on half point per game last year, but that was in a season where he was playing under 12 minutes. It was absurd how little time he was actually spending on the ice. But you know, you look at the top six, and that second line is probably Nino Niederreiter, Mikael Granlund, and my guess would be it's either Elie Tolvanen or Philip Tomasino. And I think if Tomasino wins that coin flip and gets that top six role, you know, half point per game is going to be a thing of the past, and I think it's going to be a big thing of the past. Now, the power play in Nashville is never, you know, outside of last year, it's just never really been that big of a feature for them, especially power play two. I mean, even last year, power play one was the only one that really ate. So I think a lot of this has got to get done at even strength. And if he's seeing more minutes inside the top six, you know, a 35-point pace with 11:32 average time on ice is actually pretty good when you think about it. So if it gets more time on ice, I think I love what Tomasino did in the minors. Yeah, I think there's a lot there with this kid.
Yeah, I think you could definitely make a case, especially if it comes down to him and Tolvanen. Elie Tolvanen looked like he was on the verge of a breakout last season, but then he stumbled to 23 points in 75 games. So, yeah, this one, they might give Tomasino a chance, which would kind of push Tolvanen down into the bottom six. I don't know if he gets there. I don't know if he gets there initially. I know he was sort of the one player I know that Dauber readers wanted him, Dauber to write specifically about. So he obviously some amazing numbers in junior in the OHL, only 20 years old, won a look after great camp, didn't let the team send him back down because he was too good. So this could be potentially he's looking at a spot on the top line within a couple of seasons. If Nashville doesn't really, you know, there isn't really a franchise centerman on that team. There's a lot of good scorers, but you know, somebody like Tomasino could easily find himself on the top line within a couple of years. You know, it depends how much faith you would have in, say, Matt Duchene or Ryan Johansson. I'm kind of bearish on both of them this year. I think last season, I think they kind of lucked out a little bit. You know, this could be a good spot for Tomasino again. His name hadn't really popped into my mind as a breakout, but I could see it happening.
I had to throw a long shot out there.
Yeah.
Had to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Good let's, one. Let's clean up with your last one here.
Yeah. So my last one, I had Jake DeBrusque. Sorry, I had to think about that one for a minute. Why I like Jake DeBrusque. I just drafted him in one league, of course. That's so he's going to have an amazing season, of course.
We got to speak it into existence. Yeah.
You saw how his production was affected when he was able to get a role on on the top line with the Bruins, when they kind of spread things out a little bit and broke kind of separated their top line of Marchand, Pasternak, Bergeron. So I think DeBrusque. I think the issue with him seemed to be the coach, that he requested a trade because he wasn't happy with how little the coach with Bruce Cassidy was using him. Now that Cassidy is gone, you could see a new coach, Jim Montgomery, leaning on him a bit more. He seems to be on a scoring line in training camp. So much better production in the second half, particularly the fourth quarter, where he was nearly scored 10 goals in 20 games. So I think they're kind of setting, you know, kind of on the verge of a breakout. I wasn't really big on DeBrusque prior to that, and it may have been partially due to the deployment, but entering it's going to be his sixth season. So perhaps a little bit later than the fourth year breakout, perhaps it can happen. If you're looking for another one from Boston, if DeBrusque is taken in your league and you're looking for a deeper league pick, you could look towards Pavel Zacha as well, who also being used in training camp on the same line as DeBrusque. I think Bergeron is centering them, if I remember correctly. So Zacha could be somebody that you look at. I believe he has 1 year left on his contract. So obviously in a contract year, this is a big one for him to sort of assert himself as a potential, you know, as a potential scorer. It's sought after free agent. So this will be a big year for Pavel Zacha as far as which direction his career takes.
I don't know why, but I always, like, when I see Pavel Zacha, I don't think he's 25. For some reason, I think he's like 29 at this rate. But he's still young. He's right on that 400 game threshold that you usually find with those power forwards. So could be a really big year. And that top line, like, yeah, Marchand's going to come back, but we don't know what kind of Marchand we're going to get. And there's going to be a top power play spot open for them. And they always have that fourth piece that could be Jake DeBrusk, could be Zacha. There's a lot there. So I'm really happy you brought him up because he's somebody I'm kind of like keeping him under wraps, but he is somebody that is right out there for a breakout. And on DeBrusk, man, like I think it was 2 years ago that he had an incredible year, you know, relative to what he is. And it was just fun to watch him. And then the next year he gets drafted all over the place because we think he's going to be great and then disappointed. And, you know, he's given us that yo-yo a little bit. So this year his ADP is going to be pretty friendly. And I love what he can do.
Yeah, yeah. Getting more recognized, more of a late round pick, I guess, but somebody I think that people are going to remember as having some late round success. And that's a criteria I think that we kind of look at when we're looking at breakout candidates is somebody that had a strong second half, maybe didn't perform as well in the first half, but kind of found their stride in the second half. Somebody that's a bit on the younger side as well. He sort of fit that profile. I'm thinking of one you mentioned earlier in Caulfield, where much stronger second half than first half. And you're thinking that potentially they could continue that momentum into this season.
Yep. Always hoping, man. Well, that's all I got for you. So thank you so much. We covered a ton of ground. One more time, Ian Gooding from Dauber Hockey, managing editor over there. He's seeing every single article and he's putting his little biases in there and throwing Jake DeBrusk in there and editing. Am I getting that right? Is that about what you guys do?
Yeah. I mean, we in the ramblings, I will, you know, I'll write about certain players. I don't get too attached to players, to be honest with you. And I will change my mind on certain players. I might not be that interested in a player one season, but then totally warm up to them the next season. Or vice versa, same thing. I might be big on a player one season and then just want to completely stay away from them the next season. So I think a lot of it just has to do with relative value of the player, where they seem to be drafted, how readily available they are, how much they seem to be helping my fantasy team. So you know, next season I may come up with a completely different list of players that that I'm interested in just based on what happens this season.
I feel like that's something we got to do as people in the, you know, the fantasy hockey sphere, is every year somebody should go out there and just claim their biases. Like, these are the guys that I like, these are the guys I don't like, and here's my transparent bias. We did that last year. We called them our teacher's pets, and there are, you know, there's guys that we just don't like, and maybe it's because somebody in your pool had them and they were just really annoying about them for a whole year. That's Jeff Skinner for me and my buddy Paul, but he ruined Jeff Skinner for me. Contract just compounded that. So
I can speak personally about Jeff Skinner. I had Jeff Skinner in my keeper league and I finally dropped him last season, at the start of last season, and that's of course just when he found his game. So yeah, imperfect timing, you know, that's kind of how it goes. So I had bad luck with Jeff Skinner too. So I'd add him again though. I mean, I don't think I would pick him where I originally picked him, but I'd add him again for the right price.
My co-host Raj called him a cicada because he pops up once every 17 years and puts up a really good season and then goes back underground. I thought that was a pretty good one. All right, man. Thank you so much for your time tonight. Let's wrap it up. That is it for us with the Breakouts Candidate episode. I hope you guys dig it. Hit Ian up on Twitter at Ian_Gooding. You guys can hit us up at FHF Hockey. You can join the Fantasy Hockey Discord. And we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks so much. Thank you, Ian, for hanging out. And I look forward to seeing you again.
My pleasure.